Yo, 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 what up? It's your boy, Kobe Mack, and this is Kobe Told Me About. Yo, whenever I want to, interview pod where I get to chop it up with a who's who of the dopest individuals I know, and hopefully some I'm getting to know a little better. It's the kickback station about life, movies, how they intersect. It's all for listening pleasure. Please could give your boy a follow. I'm on all the socials at Kobe Told Me on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm on Facebook at Kobe Mack. Welcome, welcome. Welcome back, and let me tell you about Kat. Yo, you can follow her on Twitter, at ThingsKatLoves. She's got a bunch of other handles, too, at ShuffleOnline, at ShuffleThePod, and newly, starting today, at LatinxLens. She's the editor-in-chief at ShuffleOnline.net. She's a film and TV critic and one of the coolest people I know. Kat, hola, mi amor. ¿Cómo está?
Hello. How are you doing?
Yo, I'm good. I am good. Today is officially 3 months in quarantine. Holy shit.
Wow. Yeah. It's crazy to me. It feels like time has not happened, but it also feels like it's gone really fast.
You know what?
I get like a time warp.
Exactly what you mean. Like, it's funny to think that 3 months ago, I thought I was just only going to have to be home for 2 weeks. Like,
I think my God, yes.
We all thought we'd only have to be home for 2 weeks. Shit, were we wrong?
Yeah, now it's like, oh, I'm considering the fact that we might be working from home for the rest of the year.
Oh, yeah. Like, we've made little prop bets at work, like, when we're coming back. And, like, I was the one, like, oh, yeah, we're not coming back to 2021. Like, at least. I just don't see a benefit. To be honest with you, now granted, I live in Atlanta, and we both live in red states. So, like,
yeah.
they're aggressively saying, bump whatever orders you want. And if it's weird, you go outside, at least where you and I are for sure, it doesn't look like that we're quarantining. But we are. Does it feel like it's quarantining to you outside?
The people?
It's people, like people are on a different set of quarantining than businesses and other operations are.
Yeah, it definitely feels like I'm in a, like my little bubble is in a weird bubble because I've been walking and running in my neighborhood for a little while, for 3 months, and the parking lots were completely empty, and there's a bunch of shops nearby, and so like I pass them all the time, and now it's like slowly like they're starting to be half full. And then now, I mean, not completely full, which is good. So I'm like, okay, at least that's a good sign. But yeah, it definitely feels like people are, it's reopening and it's weird. Cause I'm like, oh, I'm still at home. I'm still being cautious about going to the grocery store like once a week, not going to do a lot of trips and still wearing my mask. All those things. So it definitely feels a little bit of like another twilight zone. It's been like, I don't know how you feel about it, but it's just been a different, there's been a lot of stages in quarantine.
Yeah. Even though like we're still like in phase one or phase two, like technically, no, we're definitely not in phase one anymore. Like we're in phase two in Atlanta, but like people are like in phase four.
Yeah.
And there's, it's hard. Cause like, I don't know what anyone can do to really enforce things. It's like, okay, well, if this is closed, I'm just going to do something else. Like, that's fine. And I think those conveniences that I was used to in, like, my routine, that's what I miss a lot. Like, I miss waking up and going to work. I miss my in-house masseuse at my job. Gosh, I miss that so much. I miss making an excuse to go eat lunch at whatever, you know, restaurants nearby, you know, 2 to 3 times. Okay, 4 to 5 times a week. you know, I do miss those little things, and I've had to create a brand new routine. I'm not used to it. I damn sure am not liking the fact that I haven't been in a movie theater for almost 3 months. So that's been really challenging to try to reconcile with. Doesn't mean that movies haven't been, you know, a part of my life, because they have. It's just, it's in a way that I need to still get used to. I don't know what the landscape for movies is going to look like going forward.
Yeah, it's a lot of unknowns. And I think that's what is really been scary. And I think that's why people have reacted the way they have. And I can understand wanting to go back to normal, because it's been crappy. If you didn't lose your job, then you've also had to deal with quarantine. If you lost your job, you've had to deal with a lot of other things. So no matter what situation you're in, you still have had to deal with some sort of disruption in your routine. Yeah. And that's hard. But what I think I'm focusing on now is just the things you can control. So I've focused on my wellness and eating better and working out and doing the things I can from home. And I am surprised that I actually got into a pretty good routine. And so now going back to the office would seem really weird. And I'm like, oh no, when am I going to do my 2-hour walks? You know, like, so that will be interesting too, because then it's going to have to be, you're going to have to get reacclimated to a new routine once you go back. But that won't be for a little while. So,
I mean, that's the thing about like life, is that it constantly changes, and we always have to adjust and just get used like to the changes. And life is funny like that. Like, we have to adjust to this new normal. And then in a few weeks or in a few months, let's say if my job decides that they want to change things up, because they said they're going to give us like a 30 to 45 day notice, you know, because I mean, so many of us have had to acclimate to a completely different lifestyle. I mean, the fact that I was not only working from home, but then I also had to share a space with my wife, and then I also had to carve out time to teach my kid. And they're already preparing for not having students return to school. That is going to be interesting, like how to tackle that all over again, right? But you know what? That's life. We just got to roll with the punches, as they say. I mean, we've only been doing it. We've only been leading these lives for like 30-something. Speaking of which, for 30-something years, what was life like for Kat 30-something years ago? Like, how did you get here? Was it a stork? Was it some like, you know, some really like amazing, you know, torta that this baby was wrapped up in and like delivered to Texas? Like, tell me that.
Well, my parents would have to tell you that, but I was the fourth one that came out of my mom, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So I have an older sister and then two brothers, and then it's me. My closest brother is 5 years apart. So, and then my sister, who's the oldest, is 10 to 11 years apart from me. So there was always, I felt like the baby all the time up until like, I still do. it was what, 1988 December. So
what a year, 1988. Ah, remember it like it was yesterday. I was the tender age of 2. I don't know what I was watching, but I'm pretty sure it was something cool.
I mean, honestly, it was probably a good year for movies that year. So
the 80s were like a great, like,
I love the 80s.
The 80s are such a great year. I really would love to spend like an entire year. I need to do like an 80s retrospective just so I can spend time with it. Because I think there's a study that like, as our brains, we don't remember anything before the age of 4. I think that's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's images, like I know for a fact that like, I'd never watched a movie in full. But there's images of films, like, I know for a fact that I've seen that before. I can't fully, like, you know, recall it, but I know for a fact, like, I've seen it before. But 80s movies are just, they're the best, man. Those are simpler times back then.
It was. Yeah, I mean, I am a big 80s fan, and I think it's because, I mean, I had two older brothers, so they were watching a lot of the action 80s movies. Yeah. And so I got my love of movies of that sort of genre from them, I think. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I can't imagine. I can't remember. I know there's some people who can remember before they were 5 and like very clearly, but to me, it's a bit of a blur. I only remember certain moments, and they're kind of few and far between.
Yeah.
So I get sad when I can't remember certain things. And even now, some things are fading from like being a teenager and stuff like that. And I need to write things down when they do come to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and especially I think when you turn, like, I'm 31 now, and I've been doing a lot of reflection and nostalgia lookbacks, and so it even makes me more mad when I'm trying to remember this thing, like a toy I used to play with, or yeah. I get really sad that I lost a toy that I used to play with, and I wish I had it now so I could like pass it on or just have. And yeah, it's really weird.
Like, no, I feel that. I wish I had the foresight when I was younger to like keep on to shit, so that way I can like be able to share it with my daughter. Like, mm-hmm. But then I'm assuming, you know, even though we have like different backgrounds, I've moved around so much that I just never had a stable environment to try to like really be able to do that, you know? But like, I know for a fact, like I've had like things that I've seen in movies, right? Like I remember watching, you know, Home Alone Lost in New York, and that was early 90s or whatever, right? And like, you know, having the oh shit, what's the little cassette player that records?
Oh,
it was like the coolest fucking thing in the world.
yes.
Every kid wanted it for Christmas, and I remember being able to get that for Christmas. Like, it was great. I think that you and I, we're in a generation, like, one, I guess technically we're millennials, right? But like, I know for a fact that when I was in middle school, that term millennial didn't fucking exist. So it's like, I'm on the older end of a millennial.
Yeah, me too.
You
yeah.
know, or I guess they've coined the term Xennial, like not Gen X, not millennial, because I distinctly remember time before the internet, right?
Me too.
And then mm-hmm. we were at the beginning of the, like, you know, really having the internet a part of like our daily life. So like, I love that. Like, I'm an 80s baby, but I'm a 90s kid. Like, I like yeah. being able to kind of belong to both. Because I think it's just like, it's, you know, cinema wise, it's one of the coolest fucking times ever. Music was really, really great then too. And it's just like, we got the benefit of both worlds of like having technology fully a part of our lives where we can understand it, but we're also like not dinosaurs, you know, of it. I will say these Gen Zers, they've got it in a different way where it's like, I don't know, this, I've started TikTok, but I haven't like fully started TikTok. That's yeah. definitely some Gen Z shit that
I am not starting shit. TikTok. I right like
it'll
I was
suck you into a black hole.
I was also never part of Vine. I remember yeah. well, I remember I got on Vine, but I was never cool enough like to make those 6 seconds. Like, that's an art.
It
so,
is.
So I appreciate people who can do it, but I was just, I'm not cool with that. And so I already know like the TikTok thing I'm not going to be cool with. So yeah. if I see them when they pop up, I'm like, cool. But if I'm not going to try to make that content.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that like, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16 year olds, the way that they've embraced Vine and, you know, Periscope, and that was like a thing. And now TikTok, like, those are their toys. Where when we were 13, 14, 15 years old,
yeah.
I remember getting a Yo-Yo, having a Yak Back, a Tamagotchi. Like,
oh my God.
It was the cool thing to have that in high school.
Yeah. Well, mine was, I think, maybe fifth to like yeah. middle school. And I remember, cause I mean, my parents couldn't get me everything, and I really wanted one of those. And I think I ended up getting one. I think there's boxes at home because my mom is semi hoarder. So I know I need to go back when I'm able to like bring all my stuff and place it somewhere. But I know there's like going to be a whole unboxing of like cat childhood, because I think there's some stuff in there like that I sort of remember, and there's going to be stuff in there that I don't remember. And that's going to be bring back all those memories. But yeah. the Tamagotchi, or like, what were they? There was Gigapets. Another word for it. Gigapets. I had a yeah. Gigapet. I had a little dog, and I think it was a Dalmatian. And I feel like I still have that at home.
That's cool.
And yeah, those were super cool. What else do I remember? Oh, so something that's been on my mind a lot is like, I had this dollhouse, and it wasn't made of wood or anything. It was just like paper, but I remember it was okay. super cool, because I don't know what age I got it, but it had like electricity, and I remember like they had three floors, and I can remember it. And I've been trying to like, I'll Google once in a while, I don't know, 90s dollhouse, because I really just want to find that specific one yeah. so bad. And like, even though I'm not going to use it, like I don't know if I'm gonna have kids or not, but I was like, oh, I just want it, you know, like I just want that specific one. Cause I remember my brothers would sometimes play with me cause they were older. And I remember like my brother would make little paper money. And I still have one of his little things that he did, and he signed it. And I have that with me, cause it was like he was playing with me, and it was yeah. cool. Like, he would play pizza store with me with the dollhouse. And I think that's why it has such a like good memory. Cause I remember those times. And yeah, that's one thing, like, I guess that's kind of weird that I do that, but
no, just... I mean, I'm like, sometimes when I'm up at night and I'm like, I'll recall something that I used to love when I was a kid, and I'm like, all right, well, let me go to Amazon and see if I could try to find it, right? Or like, even like, not even remembering what the hell it was called, so I'm trying to Google mm-hmm. like little short phrases or something like that to try to be able to find it. And it's so tough. Like,
yes.
Yeah, I wish that we had a better way. I mean, because of technology, you know, we didn't have the technology we do now. It's like, I welcome getting my Facebook memories, you know, reminders every day, because like, I would have loved to have had that when I was in middle yes. school or when I was in high school. Like, I'll say this, I'm very thankful though.
Yeah, me
I didn't
too.
Have a smartphone in high school, because that would have yes. been really fucking dangerous. You know, because I was a little asshole, but like, I was the most charming asshole that probably mm-hmm. could be in high school. But just being tracked and shit, like, no way. Like, I don't know how these kids are able to do it. Yeah, it's definitely a different time. But when you were growing up, you were always in Texas, or like, did you ever like move around anywhere? Like, Texas has been like, that's been home.
Yes. So Mercedes was my home base for 18 years, same
Wait,
house.
Mercedes is like a, that's a name of a place?
Yeah, Mercedes, Texas.
Wow,
It's a
okay.
small ass town in the Rio Grande Valley, which is like close to the tip of Texas, so near the border.
Okay.
And yeah, so I wasn't born there because we don't have a hospital in Mercedes. That's how small it is. So I was
Okay.
actually born in the next town, which is Weslaco, which is 5 minutes away. Like they're all really close cities in the valley. So yeah, born in Weslaco and then raised in Mercedes. And my parents were from there. Their parents were from there. So I remember my aunts and uncles were there, and some lived like in other cities in the valley. But I always like this is bad, but I always dreamed of like maybe we're gonna move to San Antonio, or maybe we're gonna move somewhere. Like I wanted to
Like a
move so.
metropolitan place.
Yeah, like I just wanted to move anywhere else because Mercedes is kind of like, it was kind of boring. And then when you watch movies, you're like, oh, like this is what I got, and like I want to go where, this is where I want to go to the places I see on TV. But
Yeah.
looking back at it now, though, I'm so grateful that I was in the same house. My parents are still there, and that I grew up there because I was able to play outside and have that experience, and I think humble beginnings, and just I can't imagine now. I live in Austin, Texas, and I can't imagine how it would have been if I grew up here. I mean, probably pretty cool, but I think it was cool growing up in the valley, and I liked I still I'm thankful for it. I may not want to live there now, but
Yeah.
I'm thankful for the experience.
I mean, I think, wherever you would call like home when you grew up, it's always gonna have a special place. But I think as like you grow up, you're like, I can only tolerate that special place in very short stints. Like, I was born in Miami. And then I say that I was raised in New York because I moved from Miami when I was like 9 or 10 years old. So like those formative years and such a big shift in culture going from Miami, Florida to Yonkers, New York. It's funny.
Oh wow.
It's funny when I say Miami and then when I say Yonkers, the New York comes completely
Yankas.
out of me,
Yeah.
which is right outside the Bronx. And it was such a shift. Like, I didn't know like how to deal with it because like one, growing up with nothing but like Cubans and Venezuelan Colombians in
Yeah.
Miami, and then going to New York where I've got nothing but Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and Mexicans, I was like, and still like black was like I was always the minority no matter where I was, and
Yeah.
but like I was a bit more tolerated because I was so light skinned down in Miami, where when I got up to New York they're like, oh, you light skinned, now you're a target, so no longer tolerated, you are a target because you're not black enough. And I grew up like I moved in with my grandma. And she lived right on the Hudson River. Like the
Wow.
river was pretty much like 50 feet away, from our apartment building. And I remember all the kids I used to play with and all like the struggles I would have and like going through a couple of grades of elementary school and going through middle school and high school and then leaving. And any time that I would come back, a lot of those kids that I remember growing up with, they're still there. And that shit is
Yeah.
like, oh my gosh.
And same
Like,
thing, yeah, same thing for the valley because the in Mercedes we're very small, so it was one elementary. Now they have a few more options, I think. But for when I was growing up, it was like one the same elementary, and then it was like you moved to this other one that's like third and fourth grade. And then you moved to fifth and sixth grade, and then you moved to middle school, and then it's high school, ninth grade through senior year. So I had the same people the whole way through. And I mean, it wasn't as small as I know there's other towns who said they only had like 50 in their graduating class, and that must have been annoying to like only have those people throughout the whole years. But the thing that sucked about that is you would, it was very like if you didn't get along with someone or the people had kind of established their friends already. And so like I don't know, it wasn't. It was always just like the same people, which is fine. It was cool. Like, there were some great people there, but like there was nothing new, like it was like I'm gonna see these same people. They're all having the same experience that I'm having, kind of. There would be one or few like a few new kids here and there, but not really. So I think I always longed to just go somewhere else. And I remember telling my mom, because I would watch movies when I was pilot, like I started getting into them like middle school, and I would see all these things, and I would also see a lot of like the nature shows, and so they would be like in Australia, or they would be like doing some cool stuff everywhere, and be like, I'm gonna go there. Like I always had that curiosity, and I was like, I want to go, because I think because we didn't really go on we didn't really go on many trips. Our biggest trip would be like San Antonio, and that was like 4 hours away, like north, and that was a big deal because we were gonna go to Six Flags Fiesta Texas. Or, you know, like, or we would go to South Padre Island, which is 40 minutes from us. And that was, like, only twice a year. So I, like, longed to go. Like, I didn't want to go on a plane until I won in eighth grade when I won the spelling bee. And I was able to go to Washington, D.C. to compete in, like, the Scripps Howard National Spelling Bee.
Wow.
And so that was, like, my first plane ride. And so, yeah, it was just... I don't know. I always just long to go somewhere else, I think, because I like your experience where you're like, I went from Miami to the Bronx. Maybe I'm sure you have a lot of stories in that, but like, I would have loved to just move anywhere.
Yeah. And I think it did end up, I don't want to say it didn't work to my like detriment. It's just, it further, it made it always easier for me to be able to move. Right. So like having, and then obviously like in Miami, I would move houses like every, like on average every couple of years. Right.
Yeah.
And in New York, it's the first time where I had a spot. Like my grandmother wasn't going nowhere, right? Until she like no longer was with us.
Yeah.
But in New York, you're geared to always be on the move. So like I was never home, and like pretty much the rule was, especially like if you're not in school, like once you leave the house, don't come back. Like, like, you know, like do not come back. And it's in two senses. One, don't come back till the lights turn on, you know, till the lights go on. And then also when you leave the house, you don't come back. Right. But I think it's different because I'm a guy.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's interesting because I would date so many Spanish girls, and pretty much the rule was like, you get to stay in your house until you're married. And I don't know if it's just like, you know, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, was that like a similar sentiment that like you had like in where how you grew up in your upbringing?
Yeah, well, I had two brothers and then my older sister. I know my older sister, she went to, when she was in, I think I was like seven, so she's like 10, she was already on her way to college. So I don't really remember like what she was able to do, but I remember she had kind of a boyfriend and she would go to like the prom and like that kind of stuff, but I don't know the day to day. But I would see my brothers, and like the closest brother to me, like I remember when he was in high school, he was always going out with his friends, and, he was able to do this. And then my parents would just be like, be back when, during this time, he had his own car, you know, that kind of thing. And then when it came my turn, and I was like, oh, my friend wants me to go here. And they were like, no, like, you're not going there. We need to talk to their parents.
Oh, the double standard.
Yeah. And I was just like, what is, and then my mom's like famous line was always like, it's not that, like in high school, she's like, it's not that I don't trust you, it's like the other people. And I was like, oh my God. So I ended up like, I had a best friend in high school. And so she already knew the parents and stuff. So it was just easier to go and say I was going there. And I kind of gave up along the line of like trying to, it was always just like a big deal, and it was a little bit annoying, and but I get it, they were trying to do the best they could, and I think they were trying to protect me. I think, I don't know if I would fully agree with their method. and I've talked with my mom about it now, and she understands, but I think you also can't blame, or I mean, they weren't doing anything bad to me, they were trying to protect me ultimately. And I think some of that too, just like, I'm glad wasn't able to do some of that stuff. And I learned it on my own later, in college, but I think, yeah, it was definitely, it was a strict upbringing. So that's why I focused. If I was always inside, I was like crafting, I was doing, watching movies and TV a lot. And that's when I got into it. Cause I was like, well, if I can't go anywhere, this is all I have.
Yeah. Here's this TV. I've just got to make the most of it. So when would you say that you fell, well, when did you ever fall in love with movies and TV? And was it that's when you knew it, like, because you had this time where you weren't, you know, no fault, they weren't trying to be mean or malicious.
Yeah.
Just like they were looking after you. But like, was that the time that you kind of fell for a film and TV?
Well, I think I always pinpoint to Lord of the Rings, where that kind of made me think of film in a different way. But I think even before that, and that was about 12, 13. And I'm trying to think earlier times. And I remember it was always a big deal because back then, like, sometimes we would have cable, sometimes we wouldn't. It was like one of those things, right?
I know how that is.
Yeah, and so we would, when we did have cable, we would like rent movies. Like, I remember one time we watched, we rented Air Force One with Harrison Ford. So we would watch a lot of Harrison Ford. We would watch a lot of like Chuck Norris, like the Walker Texas Ranger, as a family. And yeah, I remember me and my brothers would watch a lot of TV too, together, and movies and things. And so I think maybe that's where I pinpoint Lord of the Rings as something where I like thought of it in terms of like, oh wow, this is amazing, I want to learn more about film stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think even before that, film and TV was really enjoyable to me because of those experiences with my family. And I think since that's all we did in some ways, like, you know, we didn't go on these like massive summer trips or mm-hmm. anything like that, like purchasing a movie on you know, back then was like amazing, or going to the video store.
That was a luxury.
yeah, it was a luxury because some of them, like back then, it was kind of expensive.
I remember like going to Blockbuster, you can spend like $6-7 on like mm-hmm. a new movie. And then typically, depending on like at least my family, everybody gets their own movie. So like it's a $20 night. And then like you pray that you, cause but back then you used to have to get a week with it, right? So you had a long time to get several watches, and I'd wear them damn movies out. And then
but sometimes like, the new releases though, you only had two days. Yeah. Everyone wanted them.
Yeah, exactly. And so you then you have to wait, like, oh, is it available or not? I mean, we had a couple, like I didn't have Blockbuster. I would have Blockbuster when I was living, like, so my uncle, he was much more well off. Like, he lived in the good part of Miami. Like, I was in North Miami and like Richmond and stuff like that, Kendall Heights and stuff. And like, but I had like a Hollywood Video or like a some other like, you know, kind of knockoff version of it. But I miss those simpler times. Like,
me
I think the last time that I was in a Blockbuster was when I was living in Orlando, and it was in 2014 is I think like the last time that I was there. And I was just like, yo, this place is still great. Like, they still got DVDs and stuff like that. I like that kind of, you know, the atmosphere where, like, you know, those specific movie guys. Like, I've always wanted – I don't know why I had such a respect for them, because I thought they were so cool, because I would mm-hmm. see those types in movies. I'm like, yeah, like, I like those type of guys, those white guys that know everything about movies, all the, like, the off-the-beaten-path movies. I want to be that guy, but just cooler. Like, I want to be that guy that has all the knowledge but can still, like, get a girl. Like, yeah, that's what I want to be.
Yeah, it was always so a big deal because when my brother could drive, like, we would go together, so I didn't have to go with my parents. And I think we had two video stores. There was Top Video, and then there was another one There was Top Video, and there was one called Movie Land. And then Blockbuster, like I said, was our second, like, the town that was bigger was Weslaco. So we, like, that was the fancy. Like, if we went to Weslaco to Blockbuster, it was like, ooh, you know, because that was more expensive. That one was huge. Like, that was a bigger selection. And I remember, I guess a lot of memories I have too are going to the video store, walking down the aisles. And then my brothers also, we would have the video game consoles. So they would want to rent video games. So we would do that too, because I played a lot of video games with them, like Super Nintendo. Then it was the 64. Then it was the GameCube. And then the Game Boys and stuff like that. So I spent a lot of time in my video store. And then when I got obsessed with Lord of the Rings and wanted to learn more, I would go with my mom, because I ended up being the only child at the house because everyone had aged out. And so it was like eighth grade to like senior year, it was just me and her and my dad. And so I had not really gone to the movie theater. It was just not a thing we did as much. I think the first movie I went to was The Mummy Returns in theaters, because I loved the first Mummy.
First Mummy is so great. GOAT status.
Yeah, and like that's one of my all-time favorite movies. Yeah. And I remember that was a big deal, because I remember my brother went with us, so I think he was still at home. And then I would go on field trips, like, you know, when you were younger, they would take you to the movies, and that was a big deal. But other than that, like, we really wouldn't go to the movie theater. It was just like, I don't know, it wasn't a thing. I think it was maybe too much hassle or expensive. I don't know. But I would always see those videos, like, because I used to watch a lot of, obviously, the Disney princesses and, like, Lion King a lot. And there was always this video of, like, this little kid taking, like, because they would have previews before in the video, videotapes, for those young people who don't know. And so at the very beginning, because you could fast forward, but it was just whatever. You would just watch everything. There was always a little kid, because it was, like, a preview for Disneyland or Disney World. And he would be trudging his, like, suitcase up the stairs and like waking up his mom and dad, and like
I
then
know
they would go.
exactly what you're talking
And
about.
I've like Googled it like recently because I just remember because the music was so cool and I was like, oh my God, I want to go. And then I knew we were never gonna go, right? But I remember those type of things.
Damn. Have you gotten to Disneyland yet? You've been,
Yeah,
right?
I went to Disneyland twice. Yeah, I haven't been
Disneyland
to Disney
twice.
World yet. Yeah.
That'll change the whole, that'll change your entire, because it's so much of movies and TV now. I mean, granted, it was then before, but even more now, it kind of like has permeated all throughout the parks. And because, I met my wife, in Central Florida, so she's born and raised in Orlando. I was there all the time. Like, because pretty much, like, if you live in Orlando, for the most part, you somehow work, tangentially, like, around the theme parks. And man, it's crazy that Lord of the Rings hasn't made its way inside of some type of theme park experience,
I
because,
know. They should make Middle
like,
Earth in New Zealand. Well, maybe they have it in New
well,
Zealand.
I know for a fact that they have, like, that
They have
interactive
Hobbiton
tour
and
and stuff. But I mean, so who owns the rights to Lord of the Rings? Is it, shit, who does? I'm not too sure. But
I
I
don't
can
know if they just
imagine that
licensed it,
people,
yeah.
yeah, they probably did, but I can imagine that people would just want to go to the Shire and like and see like a reenactment of like the orcs and stuff like that. Like, hands down. Like, I am not as into Lord of the Rings as a lot of other people are, but I respect the hell out of it. It's fun. It's not as much action for me. Like, I'm an action junkie, right? But I know that that wasn't the goal of one, the book series, or let alone like, inside of the films. But there's some like impeccable like action scenes. I mean, the Battle of Helm's Deep and the Two Towers is fucking phenomenal, right? Like, it's great. And I'm pretty sure that you can get a really cool ride out of it, So like I completely get that. But yeah, that'd be really, really interesting. I love. I don't know when I fell in love with movies. I just know like I've always loved
Yeah, that's
them.
how it feels.
Cause I've like some of the older titles, because my dad was watching everything. He'd get these videos from everywhere, and I was watching shit that I should have had no business watching when I was like 4 or 5 years old. I remember watching Blazing Saddles when I was six. I was like, what the f oh wow, okay. Seeing See No Evil, Hear No Evil, Richard Pryor, and stuff like that. I'm like, wow. So I mean, it's been an interesting ride, and I don't think I'll ever like not love movies. They've always been a part of my life. Talking about them just felt like the most natural thing when I wasn't trying to, be in them. When you kind of, because you had, you mentioned that you had like 5 years where it was just you in high school. Was it your goal to try to take that love for film and explore it more? Or is it something that, like, because now you're an editor in chief of a film and lifestyle publication online, right? Did that just happen, or like was it something that you always had planned for yourself, or?
No, I didn't have that planned at all. I remember, just, I mean, back then there wasn't, I didn't have access to the internet till like again on and off kind of, and our connection was spotty because like we lived in the country and it wasn't the best. So like I don't even, I think we would do the dial up. I remember we got the computer and it was like crazy. I remember one time Yahoo homepage took like 3 hours to load when we first got it like in 7th grade. And so, and then you would get all those AOL CDs to like get the free thing.
Get the free things, yep.
It was so funny. But then I didn't have a decent internet till probably junior or senior year in high school and, doing the MySpace and all that. But Lord of the Rings happened and I remember we would go to the library. My mom would take me and I would go and look up all the film stuff, like try to get film books. I was fascinated to like all the DVD like extra features with directors and filmmakers and the props and stuff. Like I love the special effects and all that, all the technicians. And then that just like when I would go to the video stores, I was renting all those movies, like Fight Club and and then I had my best friend at during high school. We were big movie buffs, so she would also show me some of like the movies she had seen. So like Donnie Darko and then like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless
The
Mind and like
classics,
yeah like
like
all
the
those.
contemporary classics.
Yeah, and it's funny because now some of those movies are considered like film bro-y, and I'm like that's like all I knew. Like that was they were
I
amazing.
admit that, like, most definitely, I'm pretty sure, like, a bulk of what I fell in love with film were classified now, because we're all snobs, as like film bro. But like, I think that's fine. Like, there's something special about those films. One, they weren't bad films.
No.
You know, they were mainstream in a sense, but also kind of like edgy. And I think it allowed, I think those are the type of films that are like gateways to so many other different types of stories that are told by like great auteurs. So,
yeah. And I think also back then you would find those movies, and I didn't watch those at the theater necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so it felt like you were fine. And we didn't have Twitter or anything where everyone just says what they're watching and like blah, 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 blah. So back then it felt like if you discovered Fight Club for the first time and you're like, oh my God, like you're like, that was amazing. And then you would have to talk to somebody at school with it, or, you know, try to find someone who cared enough like you did, or you would just revel in it yourself. My mom heard so many conversations where she was just like, because like I had no one else to talk to about it. And then, so just, I did that throughout high school. And then for some reason, I don't know why, but me and her started going to the movies every weekend in high school. Awesome. So yeah, throughout high school, every Saturday we would go there. Then we would go to Walmart and shop. And then we would go to Taco Bell and get our tacos, which is, yeah, I know it's like a stupid thing because it's like I'm Mexican, Mexican American. And like, I don't know why we went to Taco Bell, but, or we would go somewhere else. We would go to some other restaurant, but it was like, we would call my dad, 'cause we did have like the flip phone. Like I had the Nokia cell phone, and, we'd be like, what do you want? 'Cause we're coming back. 'Cause he would never go to the movies. He's, I don't know. He's very like a Mexican machismo kind of dude. And so, but he loves, though, I will say, I'll go off on a tangent. He does love his, he would always watch his John Wayne, like, Western movies.
Oh, yeah.
Or he would watch the most, like, obscure stuff. And it's funny because, I don't know if he still does this, but he hated watching movies over and over again. So, like, he would get annoyed. I remember when we would want to watch something again, and he's like, I already saw that.
No, I, like, I there's family members that I think we all have that are just like that. And, like, especially, like, my father-in-law, this dude, like, forever, he will watch every – just like my mother, like, will watch Westerns, either Westerns or Law & Order, all damn day. Like, just – they can't help it, you know?
Yeah.
But that's – I mean, but that's what they – that's, like, what they grew up with. It's, like, you know, it's a little comfort spot. But that's
cool. Yeah, because he would have his play. He loves being outside. He can like sit out there for hours drinking beer and just like, I don't know what he thinks about, but he would also, he also had his like little TV and like his little, like we had a little outside house. And I remember he would watch a lot of like King of the Hill and like whatever was on TV. Because then back then we didn't have Roku. We didn't have Netflix. We didn't have any of that. It was basically
got your antenna. That's it.
Yeah. And
the basic cable.
Like, yeah. And like I said, we didn't have cable on and off. I mean, we had it on and off. So, but anyway, so me and my mom would go to the movies, and she would go to everything. Like she was really easygoing. So we would go get my popcorn, jalapenos, Coke.
Doing this jalapenos and popcorn, I swear.
Doing it since like 2002.
2002, jalapenos and popcorn.
A cup. Like, you have to order. You have to ask for a small cup.
Because I usually go for their nachos. Like they reserve the jalapenos for the nachos.
Yes, but you ask for a little small cup of water, and then you use that little water, and you go to the little jalapenos, and you fill that thing up, and then you eat that alongside the popcorn. Because you don't put it in the popcorn because it'll get soggy.
But... Okay, so it's like all right, I'm going to take a cup, put it in my hand, and then take a few jalapenos and kind of have that salty, buttery, spicy.
Yeah. So we would always get a large. My mom didn't eat that much, but I'd probably eat all of it, and then we would also refill it before we left and then take it home.
Oh yeah, like that's a rule. If you got a large popcorn and your theater honored free refills, you're not gonna give that up. You take the popcorn home. I mean, it's movie theater popcorn. It's undeniable. It's cool that you guys are like so close and like had those little date days.
Yeah, it was really fun because she would always go with me. Like I was like, I want to watch Transformers. I want to watch this. I want to watch this. And she would be like, okay, let's go. And we would also have Friday night movie nights. So we would go and rent. I remember one time we did like all of the, was it the monkeys? What's the,
Rise and Planet of the Apes. Right.
Yeah. But the old ones, like we watched all of those.
With Charles Heston.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they would do like, because our top video had like $5, five for five. So like we would just rent a, we would rent a bunch. But she would always end up falling asleep. She would always fall asleep though, because we would go get Church's Chicken or something, which is like horrible.
No judgment out there, audience. Like, listen, so many of like my fondest memories in my life come around movies and food, right? Even now as an adult, Like so, and I think that's what like what's been making quarantine so hard is that so much of like my, you know, like social, like my social life outdoors is revolved around food. I think that's the most American thing that we got going for us. Like that's just like that's how it is, and it's that's how it's always been.
Yeah. So I developed a lot of my movie going habits with her because we had a routine. It was so nice. We would go in kind of the afternoon. Sometimes she would go with me, like if a new release was coming out, like Pirates of the Caribbean, we would go wait in line. But then we would see, she was a teacher in Mercedes. And so the theater was in Weslaco, again, because our town was small as fuck. So we would go there. So she would see some of her students sometimes because she was like seventh grade teacher. And so sometimes she didn't want to go at the times where
most kids would be there.
Yeah. So we would end up going like Saturday afternoon when there was nobody. So I kind of also got that feeling of having the movie theater to yourself. So I carried that on through adulthood, because I love an empty theater. I don't mind a full one either, but it's a different experience.
Oh, yeah. If I have my preference, give me an empty theater.
Yeah. So, those were very fond memories, and it was a bit hard when I went to college because like, I remember going every weekend with her, and for the most part, I think we probably skipped a few, but it was so fun and I kind of lost my movie buddy, and I still miss that because she used to just go with me and we used to watch all the movies at home too. And she was always game, even though she would fall asleep. She would be like, I'm just closing my eyes. I'm like, and it's funny because now I also do that sometimes too. I'm like, I'm just resting my, no, she would say, I'm resting my eyes. So she was like my ultimate movie buddy. And no one's replaced her. So
that's cute. So when you got to college, did you feel like, I mean, one, you went to
the University of Texas at Austin.
There we go.
Go Longhorns.
Go Longhorns. What's hook the em. Saying? Hook 'em horns, right?
Hook 'em horns.
Hook 'em horns. So I mean, that's like a very traditional college experience, right? Like you, I'm assuming you lived at a dorm and stuff.
Yes. So I lived at the dorm the first year. I lived at a place called Kinsolving, which was an all girls dorm. But you'll appreciate this. So my sister-in-law had gone to UT as well. We call it UT, even though like. There's a University of Texas system, but we think we're probably the best one. So we just claimed UT. So she went there and she's also like a fellow foodie, I guess. But she was like, Kinsolving had the food court or whatever. So, and there was another one, Jester, that has the food court too, but I don't know. She just lived there and I was like, well, she knows, and I'm going to live there too. So I mostly chose it because of the food court.
Hey, that's not a bad decision at all. Cause I'm pretty sure when we all went on like our college tours, we were like, all right, what is the, like, what's the social life like? What do the dorms look like? What's the food look like? And I loved going on these tours because they gave you the free food. I was just like, one, what's the food cost when it's not here? And I'm sorry, college food was insanely inexpensive.
It was like $2 because you would fill up a card, and I think like at the beginning I had like $1,200, and then it was like it would come out of your two. I don't remember how it came out of like. I think if you lived at the dorm, they gave you like a certain amount, whatever. Yeah. But I remember like. I went a little crazy, and then like towards the end, I was like, "Oh, mom, can you like give me more money to fill up my
that freshman card. 15 was no joke. I hit that shit up. I mean, my experience with college is everywhere. I've probably been to like 10 different schools because like I had, you know, in high school, you know, I don't want to say I was a big man on campus. I was a jack of all trades, and everyone was like, "Yo, you're gonna be like this great big thing." I said, "I know I am, but like, you know, I got to do the college thing or whatever. But I'm not gonna go to a traditional college. I'm gonna go to like a conservatory school, right?" And I had my heart set on just one, the only one I applied for. And like, I would go and do these intensives and stuff like that. I built up this amazing relationship with the artistic director and all these professors. Like, man, when you're a senior, I cannot wait for you to audition. You're gonna be a great fit here. I made all these friends, and I did my audition. I thought I fucking killed it, and then he said no, and I was like, the fuck, no.
Oh no.
Oh my gosh. I mean, but they only take 12 students a year, so it's like it was insanely competitive, and I was like, you know what, fuck that, I didn't need this anywhere. I'm not going to college at all. And then I went out to LA, and I will say, like, I got the college of real life.
That's important.
It was, it opened up. So, you know, I say I was born in Miami, I was raised in New York, but I became a man in LA because I moved to Los Angeles right after high school. All I had was $1,000. That's the most that my mother could be able to save up for me. and I made $1,000 work. I moved out there without knowing. Only thing I had was just, outside the $1,000, I paid up my portion of first month's rent. And I had to make sure that I was going to take this $1,000 and make sure that I was able to afford to stay out there because I had no other money. Do you know how hard it is to be a working actor in LA and you have to work a regular job and you don't got nobody paying your bills and you don't have a car?
Oof.
Whew, yeah,
I can't imagine.
I made it work. I was marginally successful. I'm glad that I found some movie buddies to go and like kind of not only being in LA, being in the atmosphere, but then kind of still being a part of the movie scene and being a movie fan while I'm also trying to be, a movie actor. And I can imagine in Texas losing your movie buddy. Did you feel like that you kind of lost your gusto for it a little bit or no?
No, I mean, I would talk to like my best friend at the time. We were really big into movies, so we would always like text and stuff. And then in college, I found like another group of folks who like really loved movies as well. But I actually, so throughout high school as well, I was kind of nerdy, and I thought you had asked me like how I got to be, editor in chief at Shuffle Online, and I didn't think I was gonna be writing because I always thought like I wasn't the strongest in writing. I love talking about movies, but I didn't know how to do that. And then I also wanted to actually be on in the background making movies, some like whether being like I really wanted to do special effects, and or visual effects, but it's just like there was no path like there is now. Like there's so many, you can go online, Google, and figure it out. Back then it was kind of gatekeep kept because like
You
you
got to
needed
know
money.
somebody to know somebody to put you onto something.
Yeah, so I was like, you know what? If I'm gonna maybe I can go on the other side of it, and win a scientific Oscar,
Hey, okay.
do something like that. And back then also like iPods were barely coming out, and I was like, I really liked like the tech stuff that was emerging. And so I went down, my major was electrical engineering.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so because my sister had she was chemical engineering, so I like, and we had always been kind of nerdy. My mom was a science teacher. I was really good at math, and like I loved that stuff. Like I still do to this day. Sometimes I like want to go back and finish, and I might still do that. So I was able to get into the engineering school at UT, and so I did about 2.5 years of that. And I don't know. I think I kind of. It wasn't necessarily that I didn't want to do it or it was too hard. I just felt like I didn't have the passion for it. And I felt like maybe I'm going to be in a cubicle my whole life. And then the people who were engineering, I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to be in, like this kind of thing. And I don't know. And it was very, I was very torn because if you're in engineering and the people around you, like all my friends, like were very nerd oriented and like goal based and all that kind of stuff. And so like going to and switching to radio, TV, film, I felt like I was like not dumbing myself down, but like it just felt a little like, oh, I couldn't make it in engineering
Yeah,
and
you're
then I'm
going
going to this.
backwards. Because that's what the stigma was for a lot of folks. They felt like, okay,
Doing something creative and all that kind of stuff.
especially if you're going into a field that has like prestige wrapped around it, right?
And it wasn't just like engineering. It was like, I'm going to get a job. You're going to do this internship that pays actually. And then that's the path, right? And then I had seen my sister do it. So I was like, that's going to be me. And then when I took like a few film classes, and that's when I was like, oh, I want to switch over, switched over. Actually, one of my friends also, she was electrical engineering. We met freshman year and she also did the same thing. So we switched over because I found my movie buddy. She was my movie buddy.
Dope.
So we used to go throughout college. We would go to Alamo Draft House, and we were poor college kids, and so we would go. There's an Alamo Draft House South Lamar. There's like a different locations. It's been remodeled now, but we used to go to the one where it was old. So I have fond memories of that. But there was like a taco place in front, so we would try to like go get the $2 tacos, fill up on the nachos and salsa, and then we would go to Alamo Draft House and just split like popcorn or something because it was too expensive to buy. So we would, and it was cool because back then you didn't have the system where you had to reserve, you could reserve your seats. So we would go to Alamo Draft House and go like wait in line for like the newest Blockbuster like at seven, like if it was at mid, because back then they still did midnight movies. So we would go like probably 6 or 7, and we would just do like our college homework, and then we would go to also Cinemark and Regal and stuff, and we would do that. So I remember spending lots of time in lines with her, and that was so fun because
That's
people don't do that
cool though.
anymore. They you reserve
No.
your ticket and you get there 20 minutes before, and
Or
it was like a whole
or
thing.
2 minutes before the screen actually goes up.
Yeah, I was like really bad because I would get so annoyed when like other friends who were not into movies as much as I was,
Yeah.
they would be late, and I was like, oh my God, like, and they had the car, and I was like, fuck, like, and I was just like, really, like, and so I had to like just stop going with people, and I would go on my own.
Yeah.
So I actually ended up when I couldn't go with my friend, like after college or whatever, I used to go to movies a lot on my own, and I know there's a whole thing about that, and I found so much joy in it because it was like I don't have to wait for all this group of people to decide, and they're probably
Yeah.
gonna pick the shitty movie, and then I can go whenever I want, and yeah. So after college, I like watched so many other movies by myself, like probably over 200 or more, just on my own. I had my whole routine, and I found out later on, even with my husband, that like, oh, you go to the movies by yourself? Like that's because I did that on. You know, we can when I went to Australia and stuff, but yeah, so that was a whole other thing. But yeah, I don't know. It was just college was I switched from engineering to radio, TV, film. Thought I was still going to be in filmmaking, and I don't know. Life happens after college, and you have
Yeah.
to get in the real world, and that's a whole other thing.
Do you still want to be in TV and film?
I think I had done a few on-set things with film, and I realized that I don't know if it was just the people that I worked on in the film or the experience of it, but I didn't like that. I also had gone to UT. There was like a UT in Los Angeles program for a
Okay.
semester, so I went over there before I was going to graduate because I wanted to see whether we wanted to go out there. So I actually went out with my friend, and I did actually work like at a special effects place, but I didn't really learn too much because it was mostly doing in the shop, and there
Yeah.
wasn't much going on, and I don't know. So I just had these experiences that weren't like super stellar.
Yeah.
And then LA is like, you know, it was kind of
LA's
like,
not a it's
it
it's
wasn't
an
what I
it's
thought it was going to be, like
yeah.
Hollywood and all that. And
Yeah.
it was so big. There was tons of traffic. I was like, I didn't have a car, so it was like not really fun. And it was hella expensive. So like I was running
Yeah.
on fumes there because like first of all, it like to go over there and to pay everything, it was like so expensive. My parents like blessed, like we had to like do loans and stuff. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So that was another thing. And like there was kids in the program who they would go to Disneyland and Universal Studios all the time, and I was like, I only had like $40 in my bank account,
Yeah,
you know,
can't do any of that.
yeah. And so that's when I started realizing, oh, like this is not as easy as it's gonna be like to come out to LA and be make it, you know.
But I think but I think that's it's good to hear those type of stories because a lot of folks who are so interested in the movie industry think like the end all be all is Los Angeles, right? And it's not. I mean, even for us, we're film and TV critics. To a lot of folks, it's like, well, but you're not in LA. I was like, yeah, but there's a lot of film and TV critics that aren't in LA.
Yeah.
And it's all a matter of one, the films are distributed everywhere. Like you can see them. And like now you're in a spot of, you know, a privilege where you have like you have built up a following and you have, you know, made Shuffle into something that people respect. The fact that, I mean, I think I was put on a Shuffle a little over a year ago and I was like, all right, I see this girl behind this avatar and I see this Shuffle thing and I'm going to the website. Like one, there's a lot of like outlets on websites that are really, really shitty and like this one isn't. So like I was very, very appreciative of
That's
that.
all
Like
my husband, 'cause he's a graphic designer, so he
hey,
makes us look legit.
shout out to him. Shout out to your husband. It's like it was just great because that enticed me to want to be able to read, you know, a lot of the stuff that's on there, stuff that you wrote, other people have, you know, and members, you know, have wrote as well. But like, if anyone out there has a passion to, like, if they like the passion movies that we spend all the time talking about, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be like out in LA. LA's great for access and resources. It's also not great in a lot of other ways. Just like, and that's just
Yes.
the infrastructure of that city, how expensive it is. Like, you know,
It's pros and cons.
it really, really is. And I did the best that I could, but I also did not do all that I needed to do to really make it work. Mm-hmm. And I just found that my heart wasn't in LA like what I thought it was, right? Like I thought when I was even out there, like, I'm all about this. No, I'm not, because I did not do the tough work. And I had successes, but I loved a woman more than I did LA. I loved being a husband more than I did LA. I loved being a dad more than I did LA. And it doesn't mean that it won't be in my future, but it's not a necessity. Like, I think we're both doing pretty good. I mean, what inspired you to even start Shuffle?
Well, I like the film and TV criticism. I did a little bit of it in college. And then I took kind of a big gap where I didn't do anything. And also, like, blogs and sites weren't as easy to do, or it was a lot of like Tumblr, or, you know, like
Tumblr was a thing. I'm glad that I came after Tumblr, because I don't even understand that thing now, or if it's still around or not.
Yeah, because when I was at UTLA, I was like, oh, I was trying to start something where I could write my thoughts, and it just like would never happen. I wasn't like early on in that, and I didn't know how to do that. And so that kind of just went to the wayside. And then, of course, graduating college, I had to go into the real world and pay my bills and went through a lot of jobs that, you know, didn't want to do. And then I took kind of a gap year to Australia for a year and a half. But also that was like, I had saved up a year to do that, you know. And also when I got there, I needed to like, I had to get a job ASAP because rent funds were running out. Like, you know, so it's never been like, oh, I took this like extravagant vacation. No, it was that. And that's a whole other story for another time of how much
we'll
learned there.
We'll definitely do a part two.
Yeah. And then I came back and I had to do, of course, get some more jobs and whatever. But someone had asked me to join. Like, it was actually kind of a blog kind of thing before. And then I joined Shuffle. And then just like through, like, I helped that person who kind of had started it, like kind of raise it up a bit, get, you know, Victor redid the logo and the design. And then it kind of fell through with that like partnership. And then, I basically took Shuffle Online over and, like a few years ago. And so it is what it is now. And I never thought I was actually going to be running my own site or starting a podcast or starting another podcast, or doing guest podcasting.
Yeah. Or being as active as you were. I think it was around the time of South by Southwest in 2019. Mm-hmm. I was like, yo, who is this? Like, because you were talking about all this different stuff, and it was like super, looking super duper cool. And like, all right, this lady's got my attention. And you've just like been like super, one, not only super supportive, just on Twitter and like, you know, collaborating stuff. And like, I'm glad that like even now most recently we've collaborated on some stuff together. Mm-hmm. So like, it's been dope. What's been like the most fun thing since you've taken over Shuffle like full time? Like the you know, one of the biggest successes that you just love to celebrate that you hold dear to yourself?
Honestly, sometimes it's just keep going.
Hey, I like that.
Because I remember like in 2015, it was, we didn't have as many followers and like personally and on Shuffle. And I feel like I just, maybe there wasn't as many sites, or maybe that was just like my little closed bubble. And now it can be a little disheartening when you see so many people doing the same thing. And you're like, am I even making like a dent? Are people even reading these stories? Like, what is going on? And I just think back to, I've been trying to think back to like the cat who, you know, loved movies with when there was no site, there was no nothing. It was just me, you know, watching movies on TV, geeking out over going to the video store, watching movies with my mom, you know, like, and I try to come from a place of that, because if you think about other stuff, you've got all the millions of blogs now and all the millions of sites that are happening around TV, which I think is amazing. There's a lot of us who love movies and TV, which I think there should be. Yeah. But if you get boggled down in that, it can be a little like, well, what's my little blip going to do? Like, why should I even bother? So that's first and foremost, is like, there have been times where I'm like, well, maybe I should just go back to enjoying it, get off the internet, you know, that kind of stuff. But then I do these cool things. Like, I've gotten into South By and done that for the past, like, this was going to be 5 years this year, but it was canceled due to COVID. So 4 years of South By, that's my favorite event that we do. And luckily it's in Austin. And luckily Austin also, like you were talking about how people think LA is the place to be. But like with Austin, like we have over 10 different film festivals. Yeah. They're not as big, but they're very diverse. So if you're a film person, and it's so nice to be able to go to the Austin Asian American Film Festival, the Cine Las Americas Film Festival, the Austin Film Festival, we have our own ATX TV Festival, which is one of like the fewest, like I think there's only a few TV festivals in the US. And then we have South by Southwest, which is like a crazy beast, and everyone from all over the world comes for that, and the city gets taken over. And so I'm lucky that I am in Austin doing, you know, film stuff. And then also we have a lot of art house theaters. There's the Alamo Draft House.
You're in a dope spot.
It's really cool. Like if you're a cinephile and you're in Austin, it's a pretty good place to be, because we also still have that laid back kind of feeling, and it's not as, people are still nice here. So that's been, I think, just being able to access those festivals that I didn't know existed and be able to attend as press, and do some really cool interviews. And every time I speak to someone, like a filmmaker or an actor or a creator of some sort, it always makes me so passionate to just keep doing what I'm doing. No matter how indie, no matter how big, like everyone always, like when they're talking about their art, is always so passionate about it, you know, and that always inspires me, because it just gets me jazzed, maybe not to make a movie or anything, but to just want to be jazzed as they are for something, you know, that kind of thing.
I mean, that stuff is infectious. And I think that's why a lot of folks are like, Kobe, you are on everywhere. And I was like, I get off on being around a lot of other dope folks who love doing what they're doing, you know, like, how could you not? Like, it is infectious. So like when I'm collaborating with someone and we get passionate about like a project that we're like-minded on, I feed off of that energy. And like, even in this podcasting space, you know, I've been doing it for a couple years and I'm no pro, but like, I'm a pro at being Kobe. Like, and that's all I can be able to control. And I love folks who are inviting me on their podcasts. And like, now I'm at a spot where technically, you know, I have the very limited technical wherewithal to invite people now on my pod. And that's why I wanted to do this Kobe Told Me About series, because I want to have deeper conversations with people that, at the very least, I've been like, you know, engaging for a couple of years on, and what little things can I be able to pull away? Like, now I feel like I have peeled back a few layers of Kat where we're even like closer in regards to our friendship. And you've been like super dope, just like, you know, in a lot of other different areas. And I thank you personally, you know, for cultivating a friendship with me that goes beyond podcasting. And I respect you for your professionalism. I'm in like mad respect and like hella excited for your new project, Latinx Lens. So if you can, you know, for the KTMers out there, let them know about the Latinx Lens and like what you and Rosa are doing with that.
Yeah. So Latinx Lens, I'm happy to say, is also part of the Shuffle the Pod Network.
Hey!
So, so it's exciting because I realized, you know, like I was talking about it can be disheartening when you feel like you're just a little blip, but then I realized it's about doing what's best for you and also doing what you love, you know. I love talking about movies and TV, and like you said, that passion will never go away. And so even if it's just for me or, you know, the few people who follow us, that's enough, and that's what keeps me going. So doing Latinx Lens, which is kind of another podcast, which is something I had never, it's basically talking about Latino representation in Hollywood, in film, kind of highlighting filmmakers and actors who maybe we've seen here and there, but have never been given their kind of, you know, no one's really analyzed their work, or no one's really kind of given, besides the ones who are the most popular, no one really kind of talks about that. No one talks about how, as like me, I'm a Mexican American from Texas, like, do I feel represented, or what movies have, I just want to discover more of those type of movies. And I feel like I haven't watched as many.
Yeah.
And me and Rosa's from East LA. East LA. So we kind of are both Mexican American, but we're both have different, very different backgrounds in terms of like Texas and Mexican-American is a very different thing than Mexican-American in Los Angeles. And then we're also just talking about all, you know, Latino cultures. We're going to be bringing on people eventually that will be, you know, they'll probably be Cuban-American or, you know, Puerto Rican or Colombian or all of that to talk about their perspective. Because I think a lot of times, especially with representation, it's being told from someone who has no idea about that culture, even reviewing films from Latino filmmakers. And I think it's just fun to talk about. I don't know, it's not that I have avoided talking about my roots in terms of like Mexican Americanness, because I feel like some part of me has always been like, this is who I am, and I don't really need to explain it because everything I do is inherently Mexican American from growing up in Mercedes, Texas. So anything that I've made a decision on has come from those experiences, right? So, but I think it is important, and to also for myself in terms of growth, to really look back at those roots and feel like, and to see where it really has impacted me, and maybe some of the things I've seen that have represented Latinos or whatever, I didn't even think twice about because I just accepted that fact, you know. And I think me and Rosa are really diving into all of those identity questions. What's it like being a Mexican American in the US? Because I think there's just, or whatever subculture of Latinos, because we're not all one. Even being from Texas and LA, and then there's all the other cultures. Then there's the other cultures of Latinos. my husband's Colombian, and so that's like a whole other thing that I've learned. And so the last 5 years have been really, I've been thinking about this in terms of like, who am I? You know, because I don't know, it's really an odd thing when you're pulled in two different directions in terms of like cultures. So this has been, it's been really fun to kind of go down those rabbit holes, and I don't know, I guess I'm gonna learn a lot about myself and other cultures within the Latino community. And we're also going to review films just from, you know, our different perspectives. And I don't know, it's just another creative outlet. And for me, it's gotten me really pumped up because, like I was saying, it can be really tough when you're just, you know, everyone's doing the same thing and you feel like you're not making a blip. And then some creative passion comes again. And then it's like, oh, now I want to go do this and this with Shuffle and, like, you know, do more Shuffle the Pod things. And so it's been such a fulfilling creative experience for me doing Latinx Lens and launching that with Rosa, and then also kind of going back and reinvigorating all of, you know, what we've been doing at Shuffle and have ideas for that. So I love when those things come to mind, right? Like when there's a spark and those ideas, and you're like, oh, I need to write it down, because it's when that stops happening that you're like, ooh, maybe it's time to like put in the towel. But that hasn't happened. And, you know, given everything that's happened during COVID and then everything else that's happened in America and stuff, it has been a weird time for creating content. But I think this is also an important podcast in terms of like Latinx Lens of representation and just examining that, and even just having discussions like we're not going to tell you how to feel or think in terms of what is right of Latino representation, but it's just how we're interpreting it.
Yeah, and I think it's good when you can, if you felt a call to, one, in a space of so many podcasts and so many websites and content creators that after a while can start sounding alike, you know, you want to try to find a way to be able to stand out, right? It's great that you can have this exploration of your own identity and provide an outlet for like authentic diversity and exploring that and what it looks like on the big and small screen. And you can do it with a friend and then invite people along with the journey for you. Like, I think that's like super dope. And it's cool that like I similarly, you know, felt that same call and started the Black Label podcast, you know, from another platform. Like, you know, this is from, you know, two white guys that knew nothing about black cinema. Yet these are, you know, critics who have been doing it for a long time, and they recognize that they had a blind spot, and they responded and reached out to me and said, yo, what do you think about doing like a special, you know, series to kind of explore black cinema? Because we would love to be able to learn. And it was great that that was carved out. And then now, because of the reception, it's now something that we're dropping on a monthly basis. And I love interacting with other black critics, E-Man from E-Man's Movie Reviews, mm-hmm. Black Nerd Magic up in up in the Washington area, as well as Aaron Hundley, and we are all different shades of black. And it's mm-hmm. interesting to see like how we interpret films, how we interpret the film industry in relation to our blackness, and it's cool how we chop it up and kind of tackle it from our different experiences. It makes for a really beautiful conversation. As much as education that we're giving, I'm learning so much. And it's like, it is great. I mean, I love my solo pod. I really, really do. But like, I feel like I'm that much more amplified when I'm bouncing off and feeding off of someone else. Like, I love that shit. So it is great. Like,
yeah, it me too. Is
awesome.
I feel like some of the cooler moments, I guess you were asking me, also have been collaborating with people because, like I mentioned, when I was in high school or college, I had a few of those, you know, people with movie buddies, but it's like meeting you and meeting other people who we just talk about movies, and like that would have been my ultimate dream, you know, to just do that when I was younger. And I was doing that in some way, but like this has just continued on, and it's just in a new mm-hmm. form, and it's always makes me so happy. And like every time I talk to someone, whether we're having like a podcast or whatever, about movies and TV, it always gets me so motivated. It always inspires me. It always makes me remember those moments of like, oh, you used to go to the mom moment with the theater, you know, the little kid who was just like hoping we could rent a movie, you know, like that kind of stuff. And I love that. And yeah, you're right. Collaboration is awesome. And I think conversations are awesome because I only know so much and then I learn from so many other people. And I love hearing different perspectives on movies, film, and life. And movies are just the gateway to have a conversation too on other things, because it's something that everyone does at one point in their life, right? Or on a daily basis. So you might not agree on everything, but you might agree that Game of Thrones season 8 sucked, you know, and then, or it was amazing, you know, and then you kind of get solidarity mm-hmm. in that. It's kind of like team sports. So I think there's a lot of power in movies and TV that kind of lead to better conversations. And I think especially what's going on right now, we definitely need to have a lot more conversations. And I'm also one of those people that I love hearing other perspectives in terms of like, maybe I just didn't see it from that way. And then I can change not my view, but like it just will make me have more empathy for people as well.
No, you're absolutely right. And I'll say this. I mean, that's what makes doing this podcast so worth it is the conversations. And I'm thankful for you allowing me to take up your time and having a conversation. Very, very much. I've been illuminated to really all things Cat. So pun fully intended.
And there's a lot more, but we only have an hour.
I mean, if you have the time, I would love to be able to chop it up with you some more in a space for folks to get to learn more and more about you. But outside of this podcast forum, where can folks find you, your work, and everything that you're up to?
Yeah, so you can find everything that's being written at shuffleonline.net, and then you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at thingscatloves, and then you can follow Shuffle Online on Twitter and Instagram, and then you can follow our new podcast, Latinx Lens, on Twitter and Instagram at Latinx Lens.
Absolutely, and Latinx Lens, first episode just dropped today. It's an absolute banger. If you caught the vibe between myself and Kat, you will be floored between her and Rosa. Yeah, let me just tell you something right now. When Rosa gets around other Latin people and she gets like super Mexican in some of her pronunciations, like between both of these ladies, they have some of like the most sensual voices. And like, I love every moment listening to that podcast. It's instantly going to be in my rotation whenever it drops. Make sure you're liking, subscribing, commenting, and sharing on that podcast. Shuffle the podcast. Everywhere you could be able to catch Kat. Once again, thank you so much, Chica, for spending time with me, getting to know you. And of course, folks, as I always say, when they ask you where you heard it from, you tell them Kobe told me. Peace.